Magic.
And the world of illusion.
Magic TV.
And Craig Petty. Proudly present the Talk Magic Podcast. Every week we bring you awesome interviews with the greatest magicians that have ever lived. And now, here's your host, Craig Petty.
Right, welcome back to Magic TV. My name is Craig. It's Tuesday. It's Talk Magic. It's episode 2, and I am here with, in my opinion, not just one of the best magicians in the UK, but one of the best and most inspirational magicians in the whole world, the legend that is Mr. Gary Jones. Hey, Gary.
Hi. Hi, everyone.
Thank you. He's got his brews ready.
Yeah, the beer follows.
Mate, thank you so much for coming on the show. I really
appreciate it.
Mate, you know how much I think about you. I think you're amazing. We've known each other for years. And we were just talking before the cameras started rolling. And I said to you something then, which I'm going to say to everybody now, which is I think that there's more close-up magicians in the UK that are performing your routines and are close-up magicians because of some of the stuff that you've put out than anywhere, anybody else, period. You are an inspiration to so many people.
Bless them. It's lovely for me to know that people are actually using the stuff I've put onto a DVD, because you never know, do you? You know, you put a trick or you put a DVD, but you don't know whether anybody's using it or not. So yeah, it's really good. But I try to only put stuff out that I would do myself. So, you know, in a perfect working environment. So no pipe dreams.
And I'll say the same thing to you that I said to Cameron last week, which is your stuff, I know it's going to be super commercial. You see so many releases these days and it's like completely impractical, really impractical. But we know that when we get a Gary Jones product, it's been thought out to the nth degree, like, and then some.
Well, I mean, today, because the platform's changed now, you can actually perform on Instagram, on TikTok or anywhere that your angles are actually made for, you can make your own angles. So if I wanted to show you a trick where you can only see for this angle, I can do that. But in the real world, you kind of can't do that. So the criteria for me is to be able to do it on Instagram and in the real world, not just a trick which is based around a certain angle. And I think it's better to, I mean, they're great. Some of these tricks are fantastic. You can do just for the screen, but I prefer to be able to do tricks for everywhere, going anywhere and perform.
And I'm going to ask you a question now, and this is a question that I get asked an awful lot on this channel, and I think you're the perfect person to answer it. How do you go about creating a magic trick? Because I don't know how many DVDs you've brought out and how many projects. There must be dozens and dozens and dozens.
A few, yeah.
Yeah, like through almost every magic dealer that's ever been like in existence. So how do you, what's your process when it comes to creating a magic trick?
It's really strange because, and you're probably the same, you learn the basics. You learn palming, you learn sleight of hand, and it's a bit like music. And then all of a sudden you want to do a trick and you've got the moves within you. And then when you go performing, sometimes the audience will give you the trick. Or I'll hear the audience say something. I think, yeah, I never thought of that. Maybe we can add that to it. So I don't actually come up with any tricks. I come up with routines, which are modular. I don't think I ever do any what I call one trick. So that it's a combination of lots of things, really. And what happens is your brain, once you start being creative, as you know yourself, Craig, once you start coming up with ideas, things pop into your head. It's just crazy. And some things you think to yourself, that would never work. But being in a situation where we perform, we can actually do the stuff that hits hard, sneak in one of these tricks once you've put the rapport, see how it goes, and if it doesn't go well, you either get rid of it or you go back to the drawing board again.
Do you ever look at a move and say to yourself, right, what can I do with that move? And the reason I ask you that specifically is because you are responsible for me learning the thumb palm, up until seeing your work with the thumb palm, the pop-up move, Up until seeing your stuff, your creations with the pop-up move, I just dismissed it as a stupid little move that just doesn't work. And then I sat down in a bar with you and I was fooled over and over and over again with a move that I dismissed.
Can I do a trick with the pop-up move?
Go for it. I'd love you to, yeah.
Okay, brilliant. I'm going to have to stand up for this.
Okay.
Now, the great thing about this trick is you can go anywhere and just borrow 3 coins. The coins go into the hand, coin number 1, coin number 2, and coin number 3. Hands don't go anywhere near each other, but the first coin goes across from here to here. Okay. See the second coin go across from here to here. And there's the third coin as it goes across.
That's incredible.
It's great, isn't it? So you can see the coins going in and they really are going into the hand. If you listen, you can hear them going into the hand. You can hear them, you can see them. Watch. There's 1, there's 2, there's 3.
That is amazing. That is amazing.
Such a lovely, lovely move. And magicians, they kind of poo-poo it, thinking it's unnatural, but you know, it's really, really nice.
What made you work on that then? Because I mean, you know, I do a lot of coin magic and I was exactly the same. I was like, pop-up move. No, I'm never going to do that. What made you, from a creativity point of view, take this move that nobody uses?
I saw the David Roth routine where he did with the balls, the pop-up move with the balls. And then I read the Larry Jennings pop-up coin routine, which is basically what this is. But I don't know if you noticed, I've added one thing to this, which I think is a great convincer, and I'll just show you. So the coins go in, that's the first coin, that's the second coin, and there's the third coin, okay. Now this is a convincer. First coin goes across here, now look at this, look. It's the tossing of the coin from here to here.
That's great.
It's this bit here, and this is the bit I've added to it. I think this is lovely. And it kind of makes the pop-up move logical because you can show it to everyone, you can toss it back. You see that? So you're actually throwing it, but you're not actually doing anything. It's just so, I mean, you go anywhere in the world and do that.
That's almost like photography. That's fantastic.
Well, I think it's great, isn't it? I mean, I don't know what came like on the camera, but normally you do this in the spectator's hands. Yeah.
Well, here's a question. What is your favorite trick? Like, you've bought so many out. Watch it, as Greg Wilson would say, watch your 1,000 timer. What's the trick that you do more than anything else that you're just so proud of?
I probably Dumbie Delusion, because it's something I've been doing for 35, 40 years, Charlie Miller's Dumbie Delusion, my version of it. And I have 2 tricks, really, and cards to pocket, or anything to do with signed cards going into pockets and jumping from pocket to pocket.
I remember when you and Chris Congreve bought out the Pocket to Pocket Routine DVD. Yeah. And why more people didn't buy that, I don't, that DVD changed close-up card magic for me. You need to bring that out again, because that's so old.
The story goes that we came up with the idea, I was doing coin magic and card magic, so was Chris. And Chris met these video people at a wedding, and he said to them, he said, yeah, can you do that? They said, yeah, fine. All they had to do was to zoom in, zoom out, and just keep the camera steady. And of course they were following the misdirection, so the camera was getting moving around and the DVDs got absolutely panned. We did 3 DVDs, Murphy's Magic bought them, and it was panned. The tricks, not the tricks themselves, but the actual production work and the sound. I was mic'd up, Chris wasn't. It was a disaster. We did it in Collins Pub in the Starbridge Way.
Yeah.
So, and we had the toilet sign behind. We made every mistake. But the actual, we had fun doing it. We had fun doing it. That's the main thing.
But the material was so good. The material.
I just did that. That was on there. The 3 Fly 3 Seas on there. Coin under hand, coin under watch, coin on shoulder routines, all on there. Coin on the palm of the hand. This is before anybody should put this on to DVD. And the coins across, the last coin ends up on the spectator's palm.
That is incredible. So let me ask you a question. I asked on Facebook. I'm not going to be able to ask all the questions. I said, hey, I'm going to be interviewing Gary Jones. Have you got any questions? And I had like about 1,000. So I'm going to pick some of them out. Dan Mission said he really wants to know how you got into magic.
Right. As in a hobby or performing. Hobby was my dad had a book. All my uncles would play cards at Christmas at card school. At the end of it, they would all do card tricks. And my dad had a card magic book. In the back section was sleight of hand. So if they finished cards, they were having a chat. So I got the pack of cards out and I did this trick, which I practiced. And there was complete silence, complete and utter silence. And I thought, wow, you know, that was, because they expected this young kid to do a mathematical card trick. And it was like, whoa. You know, what happened there? And for me, that was my first real reaction. I thought, do you know, I like that. And then I saw other magicians practice a bit, but back then you couldn't see magic. You had one magic show a week on TV. You couldn't go, you know, there's no internet. You had to go to the library and all have the same books. It was tough going. So you had to learn from reading books. And also I'm a lefty. I'm a left-handed person. So
same as Ryland.
Yeah. So you know, you're trying to. So yeah, it was tough going, but I think it teaches you a lesson. It teaches you a lesson about routining. We never learned tricks. We learned routines.
That's great. In
those books, in the Dingo books, there were never tricks in there. It was always a routine, a beginning, middle, and an ending. Whereas today is more tricks, isn't it?
It is. It's like, yeah, people want to learn a trick. It's not really, when you even buy a product, it's not really about the routine behind it. It's like, look at your visual moment. Yeah, exactly.
From Instagram, great for social media. Perfect. Social media, you know, you've got 30 seconds where you've got to wow the audience. Ooh. But, you know, when you're quite performing, you can't do that. You've got to do 2-3 hours or whatever you're doing, you know. So these little quick tricks are, that's not you. That's a different thing altogether. So.
Well, talking about routines, you just said, and I'm going to bring back this, you just said a few minutes ago that one of your favorite routines ever was your version of Dunbury Delusion. Hmm. Could you perform that for us? I would love to see the trick that Gary Jones considers one of his best tricks.
Of course I would. Now, remember, this trick needs to be done with an audience.
Well, I can be your audience. I'll try my best.
Yeah. Okay. Right. The first thing is, I want you to choose the card, Craig. So obviously you can't choose a card that way. So I'll let the four of you say stop.
Stop.
Okay. You happy with that card?
Yeah. Very.
See the card now. I won't look at the screen.
Got it.
I mean, it doesn't matter if I do see it because we're amongst friends here. So I'm going to take three playing cards. They're going to help me find your card, but no clues. Okay. No clues. I have the three cards. The first card I'm going to show you will tell me the color. So this is the Five of Diamonds is telling me you chose a red card. The Queen of Spades is telling me it's quite a high red card. And this card will tell me the position of your card in the pack by spelling King. K-I-N, we come to the letter G. We got the Six of Diamonds. I'm so sure that this is your card. If I'm wrong, you win my watch. Is that fair?
Yeah, but that's not my card.
What was your card?
It was the Five of Diamonds. You were close.
Well, that was down here, wasn't it? The five?
Yeah. I love it.
There's a reason why everything I did there, well, everything I did was for a reason, and the watch was one of the most important reasons.
Oh, how come?
Well, yeah, prior to using the watch, I would do the trick. They thought the card was down. They thought their card was down there, for instance. And I say, and this card is your card. And they would go, no, it's not. It's down there. Okay. And they'll turn over and you get a wow. And I was doing a trade show once, and when you're doing a trade show, you're doing hospitality or you're doing a stand-up show. People walking past, they're kind of nosy, so they would come along. They would see me in this position, and they'll say, "That's your card." They go, "No," and they go, "He messed up," and walked away. It's like, and they thought, we saw this magician on the stand. He was absolutely rubbish. He messed up a trick.
Right.
So I decided that to stop people from walking away, to keep people on the stand, to get more people onto the stand, I said, this is not your card. You wear my watch. Can you see what I've done here?
Yes.
The way human nature is, they want to see me lose. They want to see me lose my watch. That's exactly what, that's the way human nature is. So now they're thinking, and the guy says, no, my car was down there. And they go, how's he going to get out of this one now? This is this. And then boom, 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 boom. And they see the car not there, and then you turn around and you do that. It's a nice show, and boom, the trick works. Yeah.
That's great. That's the sort of thinking that you can only have once you've worked routine in. And that's the problem with some tricks that are released these days. They have the idea for the trick. They work it through. Yep, this works technically. Let's release it. Whilst something like that, it always improves. The more you do a trick, it's gonna get better and better and better. And you wouldn't necessarily think something like that, in, you know, until you've worked it a lot.
Well, going to that trick, I mean, a couple of things, right? We're human, right? So we're human. By the nature of the beast, we will have a brain fart and we'll make mistakes. Okay. No matter how, what, Faye Preston said to me, she said, it's a numbers game. If you do 100 tricks, if you do a trick 100 times, at some point you're going to make a mistake. We don't know when, it may be a small mistake, it might be a big mistake, but at some point you're going to make a mistake. It's a numbers game. What would happen, for instance, if I did that and actually made the mistakes and it wasn't their card, and then they get a £10,500 Rolex? Well, I carry another watch with me, an old battered watch. And they're trying to say, and if it did go wrong, it's never gone wrong, touch wood. But if it did go wrong, say, no, that's not my watch. This is my watch. Okay?
Right.
And another way I have done this before is I've stolen a watch before and I've put the watch on. That's why I wear the watch on this hand, by the way. So I've put the watch on, their watch on, and I said, it's under the watch. And then boom, boom. I said, it's not under my watch, under your watch. And they look at, they go, ah, duh. And they realize the watch is gone and the card is underneath their watch. Okay.
That's great. That reminds me of one of my favorite Gary Jones moments. You were lecturing at the 3CM, 3SM.
Yeah.
Many, many years ago now. And it was in the bar afterwards. And you did a ring on string. And I've never been so fooled. You did a ring on string. And for the finale of the ring on string, your watch was on the string. I'm all, what is going on? How is that even possible?
I showed that to Bobby Bernard in the Ruskin one night, and Bobby Bernard said, that fooled me. So anyway, we put the routine out on a DVD, and I put a quote on there saying that fooled Bobby Bernard, and I was at the Magic Circle, and somebody said, I don't think so. They hadn't seen the trick. I don't think you would have fooled Bobby Bernard with it, but I mean, Bobby's face was a picture. And the reason why it fooled Bobby Bernard and fooled everyone else is because who would have expected it? You know, that was not even in the remit. That wasn't even on the scale.
Yeah.
That's another way I'd love to look at things.
Yeah.
Tommy, the bag appearing underneath the cup.
Yeah.
You know, or the pom-pom, you know, it's like, you know, what you want to think of that. And that's, to me, that's the way magic should be.
Yeah. Just completely unexpected. Absolutely, completely unexpected.
Totally irrelevant to what's going on. This is the thing, you know, but that's the beauty of magic.
Reminds me of the Gate and Bloom thing with the intercessor, where he walks out on stage and the table is a bit wonky. So he just takes a playing card out, folds it up and puts it under the table leg to straighten the table. And then at the end, the signed card is the one that's under the table leg. And it's like, how do you think that?
Beautiful. But that's the way to think. I was saying on a show recently, but the nuts, you know, I walk up to the table and I say, this is the vanishing nut. And I show you that before I go and put the nut on the table. Big, you know, ring, string and nut. Put the big nut on the table. And anyway, then I would perform, then I would leave. Say, thank you very much, Baba. And they go, what about the vanishing nut? It's not there.
That reminds me of Steve Bedwell. Did you ever see the Steve Bedwell Walkman act? He did this act. I remember.
I think he did for the IBM, didn't he? The International.
It was ridiculous. He walked out with with headphones on, and he had a Walkman, and he had a cap. He had a baseball cap, and he put the baseball cap down on the table, and he did a trick, and the Walkman disappeared off his belt and went into the baseball cap. And he turned around to the audience and he said, during the course of my act, that's going to go underneath that cap four times. And he was doing something else with the rope. Oh, yeah, but forget about that. Did you see the thing go under the baseball cap? And he thought, what? Yeah.
That's the hang up, Steve. Steve used to do a lot from Seisha, Mark Seisha. You know, Mark Seisha? Yeah.
The dental act.
Yeah, yeah, coin in the eye, you know, that sort of thing, coin in the watch.
Such a shame.
Because I kind of grew up with these people, this type of magic. It was magic which was kind of like challenge magic, kind of like card under glass type magic, but done in a fun way. The audience wanted to do it. And I also realized that if I said I'm going to get the card under glass three times, I would, but it wouldn't be necessarily be the same glass. If you see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So I should do like a secret action. They go, got you. No, it was under your glass. So it's kind of like playing around with the audience. And to me, that keeps the magic fresh and strong.
And I think that's important. Have fun. You know, so many... Steve Deller talked about this the other day. He said he's doing more mentalism at the moment. And he said he hates the fact that mentalists take everything so seriously. And I agree with him. I think magic should be fun. It should be enjoyable. And you get that when you watch you perform, whether it's for laymen or it's for magicians, it's that overarching sense of you're just having fun. You're playing.
Which, going back to Dunbury Delusion, quite often, when I started coming back to doing magic again after lockdown, and obviously, as you know, you're not allowed to let them choose a card, you can't have them sign a card. So I had to create an act. And what made Dunbury Delusion so strong is that I said I've been off for 5 months, so I'm not too sure whether this is going to work. And of course, no, they think I've done Dunbury Delusion, they think I've messed up because the card's under the watch, you know, and it kind of all tied in the fact that, well, he hasn't been working for quite a while, has he, you know, sort of thing. And then bang, you go, what? So the situation we're in helped me make Dummy Delusion a better trick. And I always think to myself, if should I ever get there, if I get to like 18, 90 years old, I could be this doddery magician or doddery bloke, do a quick card trick and do Dummy Delusion. They'll go, oh my God, he's messed up. They go boom and boom in the mouth, in the pocket. They go, and then just sit there again, drinking my cup of tea, you know. I just love that. I love the fact that people judge people as well on the way they look and that sort of thing. And I'm getting, this lockdown's taught me an awful lot. One thing I am getting is that a lot of the older magicians are far, far better, or the far better magicians. And I'm going to regret saying that because all the youngsters have not, no, I don't mean that. A lot of the older magicians who've been in the business for 10, 15 years or more have matured in a very, very good way.
I'd agree with that, yeah.
Because they've had to take on, I've had to adjust to do social distancing magic. But because we had the grounding of performing in front of real audiences, we kind of get both.
Yeah.
We know what's needed for social media. And we also know what's needed. So we can go into any camp.
Yeah. And I think that's the thing, you know, I've been in magic for 27 years now. And I remember when I first got into it and, you know, I'd been doing it a couple of years. I thought I was untouchable. There's nobody better than me. I'm the greatest magician of all time. And it's just not true. There's always a million people out there that are better. And experience, there is no substitute for experience.
We're just a number. We are just a number. I watched British Got Talent and I forget his name. I do apologize. A 14-year-old lad on there.
Somebody, Jerry, he was really good. Oh,
combining classic magic with modern telephone magic, combining the two, he gets it. He's got it. I got a funny feeling that's probably a lot to do with Russ Stevens as well, because Russ, you know, he's done both, and he gets it. And I think if you're a young magician now, I think you should get both. Do both. Go and perform as much as you can to a live audience, and get away from the camera. So then I think when you go in front of a camera, then you become a better performer.
Well, from my personal experience, obviously Ryland, my son is 7 and he performs for real people all of the time. And he learns the classics of magic, you know, cups and balls, coin stuff.
He loves doing it. And it shows.
He loves it. Right, I'm going to ask you another question, because I'm going through some of the questions that I've been asked to ask you, and this is a really interesting one. At a gig, approaching a table, a crowd, or a group is tough, especially if it's a tougher gig. What is your approach, and do you have any advice regarding this?
I do. I have quite a bit of advice on this. It's very, very daunting if you're not well rehearsed and you don't really know what you're going to do. Preparation is the key, if you know what to do. And also, what you've got to remember is this. Everyone there wants to see you. Everyone wants to see magic. Okay. We do magic all the time, so we think, oh, you know, another trick. But they really want to see magic. If you ran up to the table and said, hi, my name's Craig Petty, clear the table, I'm going to put 3 rows of 7 cards here, they'll go, wow, they'd love it. They'd love it. So imagine you're doing better than that. Imagine you're doing better than a 7-card trick, 21-card trick. So you walk up to the table, and the first thing you do is you engage everyone. You look at everyone, and you say, hi, whatever. Smile, unless you're a mentalist. But sorry, Steve Della. I mean, Steve's right. I totally agree with Steve. You smile, and straight away you've won them over. So just walk up, be nice, smile, and some people don't tell the audience that they're a magician. Some people do. Some people go straight to a trick. There's nothing right, nothing wrong in any of it. Whatever suits your style. I personally like to say hi everyone and then go into a trick. That's the way you do it.
I think the key thing is learn to be likable.
Yeah.
Learn to be likable. I think the best magic book that any magician can ever buy is something like How to Win Friends and Influence People.
Yeah.
And, you know, learn personal skills. Of course, I see a lot of magicians that hide behind the magic, and technically they're superb and they're just like a machine, but people aren't invested in their performance. It's
we'll be there.
Yeah, the magic is you. The magic isn't what you do. The magic is in you, and it's about getting people to, you know, buy into that.
It's a fine balance, because when you first start out, what's more important for you? The most important thing for you are the tricks. When you first start out, you think, should I do this trick? Should I do that trick? Should I do this trick? And then gradually, the more you perform, you realize you don't need half the tricks you've taken with you. You end up doing 2 or 3 tricks. So you know, so then it's no longer the tricks, it's now you. And then you get to this stage, so it's like tricks, then it's you, then it's you, then it's you. Then you get like a balance, and then all of a sudden you think, it's them, it's the audience. So the tricks in you become less important, and what you give into the audience is more important. Mm. And once you're in that position, then you know you've arrived. That's when you know. You can walk up to any table, it doesn't matter who or what they are, whether they've been on the drink all day or whatever, you can go in there and you can nail it every time. You will nail it every time, okay? Because you know it's no longer about you, it's about the audience. So it takes a while. Tricks, you, the audience. It won't happen overnight.
I totally agree. Actually, on that subject, what do you prefer? Working on stage, because I know you do a lot of stage and do a lot of cabaret, or working close-up? Because a lot of close-up workers have got a morbid fear of going on stage. And it is, at the moment, especially with limited opportunities to perform, having a stage act is, you know, a really important string to have to your bow.
Yeah.
I'd love to know what you think. Because for me, I love performing on stage just because I have the audience and then I can take them on a journey for 40 minutes. Whilst with close-up, it doesn't matter how good a table I've got. After 5 minutes, I'm moving on and I've got to win them all over again. Yeah. I'd love to know what you think.
Well, it's interesting because when I first started doing magic, there was no close-up as such. There were a couple of places in London, but you were never booked to do close-up magic. You used to work the holiday parks, things like Havens and Butlins. So you'd do the late 9:30 to 10 o'clock on a Friday or Saturday night. So you had 800 people in the audience and 20 watching you. So that's how you started off. You all started off with stage magic. But what happened to me is close-up magic took over. It's only been the last sort of 12 years I've got back into doing cabaret again. I took on a season at this hotel. And I must admit, I should speak to Lee Smith on the way. I got on the phone to Lee or Mark Bender on the way. And I can remember doing my first night there. I haven't done cabaret in 6 months. And I'm driving and thinking, it's my opening night. It's, you know, summer holidays, it's packed there. I'm thinking, oh my God. Then the second week I was thinking, oh, I know, you know, things went wrong there. Not wrong, drastically wrong, but tighten things up. Then the third week, and then they can remember. So the fourth or fifth week, I can't wait. And of course, the end of the season, you do like six to eight weeks. So I really got into it, and then the season ended, and then you had to wait again until October. But now I just love it. I just love stage. I love the fact I can go on there. I can control. I can control it better. If that makes sense, because you know, again, when I first started doing cabaret, I was tricks, and I was, and now I know the tricks. I know them like the back of my hand, and I just know a feel of the audience. So, but stage is much more difficult.
Yes, I would say it is.
Much more difficult. The discipline, the timings, your routines, is much more. You can't deviate the way you can in close up. If this trick is dying, I can bring another trick out. And you stage is much more difficult for discipline wise, because you also have to sound your lighting, you know, the layout. There's so much more involved.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know yourself. I mean, you do the big shows as well. I don't do any of the big shows, not, you know, the illusions.
Although fairly soon, I'm going to get to a point where I'm too old to do those. There's only so many times you can shove a girl in the box and still get away with it. I think I'm on the edge right now, to be honest.
Yeah, but I mean, it depends if you play it then comedy. If you play it for comedy, then you can go on forever.
I have no choice but to play it for comedy, Gary. Look at me. When you picture an illusionist, you don't really think of me right now, to be honest. Oh, dear me. Hey, here's another question for you. Here's another question for you. What is it's a two-part question that I've been sent in. Part number one, have you got anything new coming up soon? Have you got any releases coming up that you're planning on releasing? And then the other question is, well, actually, answer that one first. So have you got any new stuff coming out soon at some point?
We've myself and Mark Bender, we have a couple of things, which I think one of them is it's going to be really, really good. Well, I mean, they're both really good, but one of them, I think, everyone would do, kind of like a Back for Life type effect, but nothing like Back for Life. And Mark is a genius. Mark, he's really busy at the moment. He's sort of working and looking after his father, who's not very well, so he's to and fro. But he's got a notebook where we've shared ideas. So we're starting to go through the notebook. Yeah, we're not sure how we're going to do it, but one of them is, we're really pleased with one of them. So we're probably looking at next year sometime.
Well, The Unknown was brilliant. The Unknown was absolutely so good.
That should have gone and they didn't go in there. There's a reason we were hoping that we're going to do two DVDs, The Unknown and then The Known. That's the idea. Then Mark would have performed them, and me and Lee Smith would have did the explanations and did the other way around. Because the idea of the Unknown was to get Mark up to speed performing. But then he had a lot of tragedy in his life, so kind of put on the back burner. But it's never too late.
It's never too late. Did you see, talking about Bag for Life very quickly, did you see John Gustafaro's handling of Bag for Life?
I did.
Oh, my God. That's a perfect example of taking a routine that works in the real world and adapting it to work virtually. When he came forward to the camera with that coin... Yeah.
But this is if you don't know the story of Bag for Life, myself and Mark Bender were having one of our pub sessions we have once a month. We stopped doing it for the moment. And I popped to the toilet and came back, and Mark had been playing with this idea for a while, and he said, I don't think we'd ever get away with it. So I developed this handling where you have the bag on the diagonal, okay? So when you pull the coin through, the penny would fall to where the larger coin was, okay?
So good.
So that, and they hand everything out. This is for wedding magicians in the UK. I'm not sure it's going to work anywhere else in the world. If you go onto eBay, you can buy sixpences, sixpence, the old sixpenny coin. So I have a £2 coin and I have a sixpence. Now, as you know, at a wedding, the sixpences are lucky. Something borrows something blue, and they're always the lucky sixpence. So I have the sixpence in there, I have my sticker on the bag, I have the £2 coin. And I turn and say, would you like the lucky sixpence, the coin that will bring you happiness for the rest of your life, blah, 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 or would you like the £2 coin, which won't even buy you a drink? And so they always say the sixpence. So then I take away the £2 coin and I hand them the sixpence to get that to keep.
Okay, that's so beautiful.
And you can buy 100 for £12 on eBay. So 100 weddings to cost you £12, and they get a lucky sixpence with your details on. Just a small little tip.
That is amazing. That is a great tip. That's fantastic. Well, you know what? I've got another question here. If you could look back and give your 10-year younger self some advice, what would it be?
I was definitely, why did I wait so long to do what I'm doing? And I can tell you the reason. I'll try to be as brief as I can. When I first started doing magic, a lot of the older magicians used to tell me that what I was doing was too clever and it knocked my confidence. So I probably started 15 years later than I could have doing it purely because of confidence issues. When I realized that they were wrong, and ironically, someone was still doing the bad things they had taught me all these years ago, they haven't moved on from there. So it taught me this. When people turn around and say to you things like that, they're not talking about you, they're talking about themselves. 99.9 of the times, you know. So the reason why I'm doing the clever stuff is, this is not being arrogant, it's because you can't. It's not whether they can't or not, everyone can do it. It's just they haven't bothered to sit down and practiced it and performed it. So we can all do it, we can all do it. So my advice would be, try not to listen to others and just go with your gut feeling.
It's really true. It's so true. You know, people can be really negative, and yeah. I think you have to find your own path. You have to be true to yourself.
Well, no, I don't care. This is it. You get to the point where I don't care because I don't listen to you. No, I listen to my audience. I listen to my bookings. I listen, you know, they pay for my life. So I don't listen to magicians. I take advice from magicians because they're a lot better magicians than I am. But I find that the ones who are constructive are the ones that are most successful. And the destructive magicians tend to be the least successful. So
it's very true.
You don't have to look very far to take advice from people.
So, that's very, very true, Gary. It really is.
I didn't mean to say that on camera, but hey, it's warts and all. But
exactly.
I don't care now. I don't care what people say now, but 20 years ago, I think, you know, 10 years ago, whatever. No, maybe 30 years ago. But 10 years back, no, I don't really know, actually. I've enjoyed it. I'm enjoying the ride.
Yeah. That's awesome. I've had about 4 different people ask me to ask you about your version of free will with words written on the back of playing cards.
Yeah.
I don't even know what this is.
It's kind of an awkward one because we are going to kind of release it in a project. So okay. I would like to have performed it, and I know a few people have asked me. It's like, we've been doing it for years, so myself and Mark. And it's quite clever. There's no, how do you say it? Equivoke?
Yeah.
Is it? Yeah.
I don't know, equivoke, equivicky, whatever.
Yeah, none of that. It's kind of really, really, yeah. So watch this space on that. Watch this space.
That's... Free will is one of my favourite tricks, so that's going to be. I'm looking forward to that one.
Chris Condry's got a great one, which we put on Automata, which is really, really good.
You know what, Chris is so good. I think he's one of the. I think people don't realise just how good Chris Congreve is. I've gigged with him several times, and he is such. I mean, he's the guy that's got the personality. Personality right down, you know, as soon as he walks up to a table, people just fall in love with him.
Have you ever seen his cabaret act?
No.
He did a season of holiday parks in North Wales and places. Then we were booked to do a corporate event. It was a bar mitzvah in London Zoo. Chris did the cabaret, I did the close-up. And Chris went on, he absolutely nailed the cabaret. The first time I've ever seen him perform cabaret. He's one of the reasons why I got back into cabaret again. Yeah, really, really funny. Really, really funny.
Oh, that's awesome.
Great.
Nah, he's a great guy.
But yeah.
Yeah, because you and Chris have been linked together for years, you know, I mean, with all of the Workers' Corner stuff and all of those DVDs and other DVDs that you've brought out over the years. Yeah, the two of you, but almost double acting.
You were there as well. I think going back at the time, I was at the Wolverhampton. I went to see a lecture. I think it's Andy Nyman or somewhere. And I got a funny feeling you were there. I think all the Midlands guys were there. And we went to this piano club afterwards. Some piano club. I don't even know it. where they would all meet afterwards and have sandwiches. Anyway, Chris was there, and we were talking. We shared the same, you know, we did the boost switch, we did the three fly. So we started talking on the phone, and then we decided to do a DVD together. Yeah.
That's awesome.
And then we had the 3SM Club, which you were part of.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember that was the first time I saw you lecture, and I was just blown away, like I said. I'll tell you why I was blown away, Gary. We've all been there, you and I have both been there, when we've seen lecturers, and I talked about this with Cameron last week. You see a lecturer who comes in, and they're literally just going through the motions. They don't really want to be there. They look at it as a gig. Their whole concept is get in, get out, goodbye. Whilst you were just like, literally the bar staff had to kick you out. You were just there jamming afterwards, and it's just like,
let's do it. Everyone's gone, just me on my own.
It's just like you must have been there till like about 1 o'clock in the morning, and it's just like that just shows how much you cared. You know what I mean? You wanted to do the best possible job that you could do and teach so much stuff, and it was lovely to see. I hadn't really seen that before up until that point.
Well, Jim, one of my pet hates about, and I say pet hate, it's not that bad, is the word lecture. I think Paul Golden and John Kerry probably got it right by saying workshops. I'm coming along to do a workshop. Because I don't like the idea of a lecture. I don't like the sound of a lecture. I prefer it to be more hands-on, although it's not very easy to do these days. But it seems lecture seems... I don't like the word. I wish we could come up with another word for it. Teaching or something. Yeah.
So what's on the bucket list for you? What would you like to achieve? Because you've been there, done that. You've had the sort of career that most people would dream of, both as a creator, you're a magic from, you know, your the stuff that you've done for magicians, but also as a performer in your own right. You've had an amazing career. Is there anything left on the bucket list?
Yeah, well, it's interesting you say that, and you're probably the same, Craig. When you start out in magic, you start out as a hobbyist. Some of my friends, when they were hobbyists, they wanted to become great magicians, fantastic magicians. That was never on my bucket list. I never had anything on my bucket list. Everything that's happened to me has just happened the way it's gone on, if that makes sense. So I didn't want to lecture. I didn't want to come up with magic. You know, I didn't want to. That was never in my, in the remit. Everything just happened. And I've ticked off 10, 15 things more than I even thought I'd ever do. So no, I don't. Looking forward, I've had a really, really good career. I'm enjoying myself now. I'm really thoroughly enjoying myself. I enjoy performing. I love creating. I was looking forward to doing the convention in Holland in January, which got cancelled because I've already done a couple of conventions. So that was quite nice doing a convention. I mean, I've done a Murphy's lecture, I've done a Penguin lecture at the table. And I've pretty well done it all, really.
That's what I mean. You've done it all. You've had such an amazing career, and it's not even over.
No, far from it. Yeah, no. Magicians don't. We just go on and on, don't we? But I know for a fact that age is not important if you kind of reinvent yourself. So I don't really want to go down the wedding magician road again. Now, I became the wedding magician at the right time when we had the corporate crash in 2008. And I just kind of did my last lot of trade shows and managed to get in the wedding market. So that crashed and it worked out really well. But I don't know. I really don't know. I don't need to do anything, if that makes sense. So everything I'm doing is a bonus.
Well, here's a question for you on that subject. And you have always been relevant and you have always been at the top of your game. Do you have any advice for people for getting more work, getting more gigs? Yeah. Yeah, you know, because it's something that magicians are always wanting. Everybody wants more gigs. And you've never needed more gigs. What's the secret to your success?
More gigs is because one of the worst bits of advice I've ever heard was a magician telling another magician, "I'll put the cards away. Don't do this, don't do that." Okay. Now, I'm a great believer in going anywhere and everywhere and then making people know I'm a magician, whether it be in a bar or especially when I'm abroad, you get the best tables, you get the best tapas, you get the best beers, you get the best of everything. So why not use it? And it's costing me a few tricks. I'm a great believer in showing magic everywhere you go. I can walk around Exeter and people, "Oh, there's the magician, there's Gary the magician." You know, I do all Exeter Chiefs, you know, in the finals. You know, and they wouldn't have known that unless I did magic in a pub, not just at a gig. So perform as much as you can, because they want to, you have to be seen. You can have the best website in the world, but if you're not seen.
Which is one of my pet hates. One of my pet hates in magic is those magicians that get asked to do a trick and they go, I've got nothing on me. You know, if you're a magician, you should be able to do magic.
Yeah.
Regardless. It's one of the reasons why I created Keymaster, because I wanted to be in a situation where I had a really good trick on me that would organically fit with what I had while I was out and about. And that's where Keymaster came about from. But I think that you can never do that.
You're the master of coin magic, so you've always got coins on you. You can go anywhere in the world and borrow the coins. Yep. And that's what I do. I go with coins across, and borrow steals coins across in people's hands. Coin on shoulder, coin under watch, watch steals. This is all impromptu magic. Borrow notes and do knife through note. This is all impromptu magic stuff, which is, you know, Paul Daniels thought it was good enough to feature in his TV shows. You can do anything.
Could you show us one of your favourite coin tricks?
Of course I'll show you. I used a small piece of paper. Now, do you know what kind of paper this is? Tissue, bless you. Okay. And we set light to the paper, watch what happens. That is a pure silver dollar, over 100 years old. Same age as my jokes. Oh, there's two. Two. Silver dollars. Coin number one, coin number two, there's coin number three. You can examine all these coins. If I can make them appear, I can make them disappear. To appear, to disappear, to appear. Three silver dollars. Okay, you're probably wondering where I get these coins from, or I get them from this pocket. What happens when I do this over here, you look across, this hand goes to my pocket, I get a coin, I flick it, it goes so fast, your eyes don't see it. Yeah, okay, you're not buying that, right? So I'll do the trick in reverse. I'll take each one of these coins and throw them back into my pocket. This is the first coin. What's the first coin? Did you see it go? Faster than the eye can see. And it really is over here, into the pocket. What's the second coin go? Am I going too fast? Coin number two. What's the third coin? Land invisibly. Just here. One, two, three coins. Thank you.
That was great. That was exceptional. That's exceptional. Yeah, that's
not exceptional. The best performance of the day, but it's, you can see, it's just a lovely routine. And every coin can be examined. That's the great thing about it. You drop the coins into the spectator's hands.
Why do you think more people don't do coin magic?
Because it's difficult.
Yeah. Yeah. It's true. It's true. Sums it up really.
It was true, isn't it? It's not easy. It's not easy. Yeah. It's difficult. It's hard to do. It's hard to do. In not just cases, the slides are hard to do. The timing, the pacing, and the... that sort of thing. It's hard to do. So that's why.
Absolutely. I love your use of flash paper. I've seen you use flash paper an awful lot. I remember Mark Oberon turning around to me and saying, flash paper takes any trick and makes it 20 times better. And it really does. You know, I remember, do you remember that trick that you put out? I think it was through Full 52, the bar cups.
With yes. The cups and balls routine.
With the flash paper. That was so good.
It's interesting. I wanted to. Bob Reed always said many years ago, a great piece of advice: try to incorporate one of these four items into your shows: fire, liquid, glass, and money. Okay, fire because you can't palm it, you can't hide it. Glass because it's fragile. Liquid, you can't palm liquid, and money because everyone can relate to money. So. When I did that the 3C routine just then, it wasn't, say, great, because if I'm working in a social distancing show and I can't hand the coins out, I drop them into a glass. So the fire, that's the first thing Bob said. Money, that's the second thing, drop into a glass. That's three items already from Bob's list of four things you should put in your act. And I've seen magicians do tricks where they have fake fruit or they have fake plastic glasses. And they drop a coin into a glass, and you don't get that lovely sound of glass. So have those in your act if you can. But the question, oh yeah, fire. And the other thing as well, the two reasons why I use a small piece of flash paper. One is because it's nice to produce something big from something small. The second thing is it's cheaper. So I can have one piece of flash paper last me a year.
Spoken like a true person from Devon.
Yeah. Well, you know, it costs money, doesn't it?
That's brilliant. And what, outside of, let's say that you were in a place and somebody asked you to do a trick and you had no coins and you didn't have a pack of cards and nobody else had any coins, what would you do?
I'll do a mind reading trick.
Really?
I could do it anytime, any place, anywhere. The only thing is it's not mine.
Mm-hmm. But you know what? I don't think of Gary Jones as a mind reader.
I love mind reading. I'm not a purist. I believe that you can actually do a magic trick and do a mind reading trick. And do a magic trick and mind reading trick. I think you can incorporate the two. A purist would disagree with me. That's fine. And I did an experiment once before with sponge balls. So I started doing a bit of mind reading and I turned around and I put the sponge ball in my hand and one sponge ball in their hand. Okay. And I said, we imagine if I could take the particles and break them up and make them transfer through blah, 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 blah. Oh my God. You know, well, it's all presentation. It's all to do with that presentation.
That's fantastic.
And if you start talking about, if you can do magic, they think you can read minds. They think you can read minds. So it's only another mind reader who turn and say you shouldn't incorporate the two. I'll get shot down for that. That's fine. But there again,
I agree with you. I tend to do what I call kind of mental magic, kind of, you know, kind of mentalism, mind reading, but done in a kind of a magic.
You don't claim to genuinely read minds, basically.
No, definitely not. Definitely not. Do you do Rubik's Cube magic? I've always wondered.
Yeah.
I'm not surprised.
And again, a lot of people don't like it, which is great because I don't do a lot. I do a matching cube and then I sell the cube. But I sell the cube magically, not, you know, I do it through comedy as well. And I do around the tables. In fact, I did an Alakazam Academy. One of the routines was I put a prediction Rubik's cube down on the table. And then I'll just, a miniature cube, get someone to mix up the cube, place it here. The card appeared under the cube. The pack appeared underneath the cube, but then the two cubes matched. They mixed the cube up and that was there all the time. And that was a case of just on the offbeat, taking that cube out, putting another one down. You know, not revealing any secrets here. So, and the reaction, I did a live, I chopped in a live performance on the Academy and you saw the live reaction. The kid was going, but how? Because they can relate to it, especially younger audiences can relate to it. And older audiences, they've all had one and they can't do it. So if you can take a cube, which has been mixed up, boom, and make it stoved, that's a miracle. To a layperson, you know, people have had cubes in their houses for 20 years and they can't solve the cube. But for you to go, and then hand the cube back out to them, it's a freaking miracle.
It is. Anyway. Here's a question for you. Paul Craven has asked he wants to know if you can perform Metal Sheep.
I can't.
No problem.
But I can do something using the same principle, which I'd like to just show you. Would that be okay? Did you do
that? Yeah, that'd be great. I'd love you to.
Okay. It's a puzzle. It's a puzzle. I have two coins in my hand, and they add up to 12 pence. 12p, English money, British money. 12p. But one of the coins isn't a 10 pence piece. What two coins do I have? Two coins.
I've seen this puzzle before.
Yeah.
It's 10 pence and a 2 pence.
It is. It's a 2p and a 10 pence because the other one is a 10p. Okay. So if you could choose one of these two coins, the 10p or the 2p for me, what do you choose?
The 10p.
10p? Okay.
Yeah.
For you, the 2p. Now watch. Watch the 2p. Can you see that happening?
Yes.
And there you have it.
Whoa. That's incredible.
Completely self-working. Now, I'm doing this in social distancing now, and I actually put their initials on the 2P, bend it, and I just leave it on the side there, whether they take it or not, or sometimes I'll spray it with sanitizer. But then that's the self-working coin bending routine.
Okay. That is amazing. Can I don't want to give too much away, but is that a pre-bent coin and a double facer?
It certainly is. That's something I came up with a couple of years ago, and I put it on Automata DVD. And I have loads and loads of stuff with this. But do you know what's really good about it is during social distance and you can't borrow any money. So now imagine this now. Imagine I take the 10p, I take the 2p. Name one of the coins for me. You said the 10p. For me, you get the 2p. If you said the 2p, I say, okay, we'll do the 2p and take the 10p away. Can I have your initials, please? CP, okay. Wait for that to dry. Pen, watch. And there it ends. Completely 100% self-working. Percent self-working. Easiest trick in the world.
That is incredible.
So that's half of Metal Sheep.
That's really cool. I'd never. Automata is one of the only DVDs that you've released that I've never had. So I've never seen
it. It's all self-working. It's no good for you.
That's probably why I didn't. Yeah. But it was really, that was great. That was amazing. But you know what? So there are, you know, it may be self-working, but it's just as strong as something that requires so much sleight of hand.
How
do you decide when you're going out and performing? You've got so much material. You've got literally, you could go out and I imagine you could perform for 24 hours without having to repeat a trick easily.
See, yeah, no, it only feels like 24 hours.
But seriously, when you've got that much material, how do you decide what to do? You go, you're at a gig, you're there for a couple of hours, you're walking around, you've got all this stuff going on. How do you decide when you've got such a massive repertoire, which routine to go to?
You can relate to this, Craig. Residencies, okay? So I've been a resident magician at some hotels over 20 years, 27, 28 years. And I'm currently at the Thurston Hotel, the Victoria Hotel, and the Belmont Hotel in Exeter, at Simmouth and Thurston. So I see people, the same people year in, year out. They come with their families get older, they have younger families to come through. The core stays the same. The core, few, two or three tricks, you know, the coins and stuff. Then it's the rest of it that changes. Because you want to show the people you want the stuff you do all the time, and then you want to show the people who've been there before some of the new stuff, one or two new things. So you kind of have this core of magic on you, then you have a load of other stuff. Keymaster, I love Keymaster. In actual fact, I'm actually you brought a trick out which is perfect for social distancing shows and perfect for the COVID-19. Okay. And I use it, I brought it along with me. I'm not gonna do the trick, but you probably know what this is. I set up a social distancing Facebook group to help people with social distancing magic. It's easy for you to say. People say you can't do tricks like the Omni deck, but then you brought a trick out
a few years ago. Where are we going here?
You know where I'm coming from?
Yes. Quarantine.
Quarantine, and what a great name. Can you see? No, I use this all the time. This is my ending to my ambitious car routine, which I do social distancing around the tables. So at the end of it, we've got to make everything safe. I've now quarantined the deck.
Perfect.
You heard it here first. You're only getting some Craig Petty.
Well, so, I tell you what, I still have a couple of them down in my warehouse. I've got my own copy. I'll tell you what I'll do. Anybody who's comments down below with their favorite Gary Jones routine, I will pull them out of a hat, and the first two that get pulled out of a hat, I'll send them a copy of Quarantine. There you go.
You get a car box as well. This is beautiful. Absolutely genius. And it's so, you got 18 months of this going on still. So you've got 18 months of using this. You can use it all the time, but you, and also two, 3 years afterwards, you can say, remember 2020? Boom.
Yep. Oh, well, you know, it means a lot that you're performing on my routines. Thanks, Gary.
Love it. Yeah. I mean, it's you know, did you create this knowing this is going to happen in 2020?
I had a premonition. I thought 2020 is going to be a shit show.
It certainly is, isn't it?
I'm going to
laugh about it.
Oh, dear me. Let me just check my questions and see what other questions I've got, because I am desperately wanting to try and answer. I want to get you to answer as many people's questions as I can. So Dan Mission has asked one other question. And the question is, can you ask Gary, what value do you think magic can bring to people's events or even people's lives?
Wow. Well, very deep. Yeah, but great question, Dan. I love Dan. He's got some brilliant magic. I'm watching some of Dan's clips there. Yeah, he's doing it. Bless him. Lovely guy. The couple ways to answer that question. I think if you can put a smile on people's faces, especially during times like this, that's a huge amount of value. We all know the pluses for doing magic at corporate events, getting people to come up to your event or to schmooze with clients. We all know about the ice breaking at weddings and get people talking and at parties and functions. So magic has many, many uses. And all those things I've just said there should be on your advertising, where you advertise, because you can change people's lives basically with it, where you can change events. You can make events become much better with magic. And you know, that doesn't work with all entertainment. Magic is so interactive and we can mix them in with people. I think magic has more power than most other forms of entertainment. So we're very lucky. I suppose silhouette artists and caricaturists will also can add that, but because we're interacting, they're very quiet because we're interacting. Also, and some places people feel a bit awkward. Maybe you're at a residency and there's been a bit of a spat between the waiter or there's a delay, or something's wrong with the food. You go over there and you schmooze and you make you give the restaurant a really good name, you know, and you apologize on behalf of the restaurant. So it's got so many uses. I worked a residency for 18 months in a speakeasy bar in Exeter called the Book Cover, which has gone bust now, nothing to do with me. But they were making real cocktails. I don't mean the pre-stuff Las Iguanas cocktails. I'm on about they made it from scratch. They made it from the very beginning, and it would take an age to make a cocktail. Sometimes a wait of an hour for a cocktail. It was ridiculous. If you went on to TripAdvisor and you looked at all the bad press, magic's fantastic. The wait, it was always to do with the wait. Okay, so I earn my money at that gig. You know, do 2-3 nights a week. I was earning my money. I was schmoozing all night, making people forget that they had to wait a long time for the drink. So
very, very important. Yeah. Very, very important.
And also, I think if you're a stage magician as well and you pay a lot of money, you want to go out and forget the world. Like if you go in a film, you want to be part of the film. You kind of forget that. An example would be a car chase. If you've ever been in a car and someone's hit you at 5 miles an hour, a little bump, you nearly go through the windscreen. Yeah, you see a car chase is spinning over and they get out of the car and they get knocked out again. And you know, you suspend belief. So you can take people away at the show. If you're doing a stage show, you can just suspend their belief. You're a chosen magician. The parents can suck the wine in the kitchen knowing that the magician has got everyone, the children under control for 2 hours. We have so much value. So much value.
It's very, very true. It really is. It really is. Very succinctly put. I've got a couple of questions before we wrap this up. One question that I want to know myself personally. Who are your favourite magicians, or in terms of who has influenced you in your career the most? Who would you say, you know, are your favourite influences in magic?
Three magicians I'm going to mention. One is probably slightly known. One is very known, well known, and one no one would know except for a few people in Exeter. And all three have one thing in common. The first one is David Carr from Bournemouth. He's a legend. He was with Dye Vernon. He's still going strong now. Still doing magic. Genius. He brought out two DVDs, Expert Card Magic, Volume 1 and Volume 2, with Roger Cross.
Is that the guy that bought stuff out through Tricker Tape? Long hair. He blew me out the water. Is this the guy that was like, I remember his videos. He was doing the pass completely invisibly. He was culling a whole deck. I remember him having aces in the middle and they were coming. I remember, right? I'd learnt magic. I'd got to a point where I thought I was pretty good. I was good with the deck of cards. I had it all nailed. And then I made the mistake of buying his DVDs. And Tricker Tape, VHS tapes, Vic Pinto Tricker Tape. And I just watch this and I just think, I suck. This guy was doing stuff that I didn't even think was possible. And he was just explaining. And I was getting fooled with the explanations. I'm like, where did this guy come from? He's exceptional.
A shuffle deck, a full pack card, where they got ace to king from a shuffle deck.
I remember. And I remember the routines. I remember it all so well. And he had this routine where four aces were put face up in the middle of the deck. No. He took half the deck face up and half the deck face down. And he snapped and the decks separated face up and face down. Then he did it again. It was like multi-phase, and then in the end, the entire deck that had shuffled was in new deck order, and the four aces were reversed in the middle.
With different kind of bounce.
He was amazing. He was I'm so glad he's still performing, because that guy was a legend.
Yeah, he is a legend. He does go along to the Wessex Magic Society ever so often. He just pops along, wins a closer competition, and disappears again for... I used to session with David. We'd start at midnight. We started at midnight, go on to 6 in the morning. I go into his house. He lives in Branksome in Bournemouth.
You know what? Some magic dealer somewhere needs to find those VHS tapes, get the rights to them, and bring them out today, because it's better than 99%. The stuff that he did on those VHS tapes is better than 99% of stuff that's been released today.
I think Vernon said in, 1977, this guy's going to go a long way. So we've sessioned. Then he would come into my place. And there's another guy called Ron Heaver, passed away now, Ron, bless him. But they had something in common. They always smiled. They were always smiling when they're performing. It was always lovely to watch them, whether they were good or bad. It didn't matter. They were just so good. And Ron said to me, he said, always smile, always smile, keep smiling. And then your magic will shine through, which brings me to the third. So it's Ron Heaver, David Carr, and the third person is Gary Kurtz. And Gary Kurtz, I know.
I did I filmed. It's not come out yet because I'm trying to get ahead of myself with the stuff that goes on the channel. And this is coming out on Tuesday, but I've been doing this series of videos, the three best packet tricks you've never seen, the three best tricks with double backers you've never seen. I've just done and filmed the three best tricks with double blank cards that you've never seen before. And the first one was Inside Outside by Gary Kurtz.
Beautiful. Absolutely beautiful.
He is a legend. He was so ahead of his time.
Yeah. He came to the UK. He's Canadian, I think, isn't he? Canadian. He came to the UK at the International Day, and he was doing, you would have loved him because his coin magic was phenomenal. But he was doing stuff, and it was just the way he was doing it. It was just easy. It was just, and it was like poetry in motion. And he was smiling, looking at the audience. His presentation was just superb. And I thought, that's just amazing. I don't care what you're doing. Whatever you're doing is going to be good. And I just love that style of, it's just magic just happens. Beautiful.
And it shows that you can do the difficult stuff, but still make it entertaining.
When you go to the explanations, you think, really? You're doing that? Yeah, you're 6 coins in that hand, 6 coins in that hand. It's like, really?
I remember spending 2 years learning Flurious perfectly, flawlessly. Not because I ever wanted to do it, just because I wanted to learn that routine.
Beautiful, absolutely beautiful. Gary Kurtz to coin magic is like David Williamson to card magic. David Williamson, David Williamson just you think, did you really just do that? You don't know, do you? Because he's so good. He's so good. He's so funny. You forget that, the fact that he just performed some amazing sleight of the hand, fantastic.
That's a great list. That is a great list. That is an awesome list.
Hundreds more, obviously, but.
Yeah, but those, Yeah, no, I agree. One last question. And this has been amazing. And once again, Gary, thank you so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate it. Can you finish off by performing one last card trick for us?
Yeah. Yeah,
Chris. Just because you've done a lot of coin stuff. You've only done one card routine. Everybody knows you as a card guy as well as a coin guy. And I'd love to see one last card routine if I can.
I certainly will. And uses eight cards, four queens and four twos. Four queens and four twos. Queens, twos. I'll show you the twos and the queens. Now watch, if I take the first queen and place it on the bottom, it just jumps all the way to the top. And there are only four cards, and these are the four twos. The next queen is going to get placed into the center, slowly going into the center, and it jumps all the way to the top, leaving me just four twos here. I know what you're thinking. Am I really placing the queen into the center? So watch. Very slowly, you can see there are two twos below, and there are two above, and there's the queen. Watch. Very slowly, as the queen goes into the center and jumps all the way to the top. The last queen is the hardest queen. I'm not even going to touch the last queen, I'm just going to drop the twos onto the last queen as it just passes all the way up through, leaving me with just four twos and four queens. But watch, if I take this queen and place it into the center, just use just five cards. Did you see the queen jump to the top? And the four twos here. If the four twos are here, the queen must be, actually the queens, the twos are down here, the queen is over here.
That is so good. That is so good. That was off Eye Candy. I recognise that one from Eye Candy.
Oh, that was Eye Candy, yeah. I've done it for ages.
I thought that you were going into Upper Hand when you brought out the eight cards.
Yeah. Well, you could go into, you could do Upper Hand first, then go into this. Yeah.
Because Ryland, as you know, you're Ryland's favourite magician. And he's got an insatiable appetite to learn anything produced by Gary Kurtz. And I made the mistake of being on Penguin Magic the other day, and he was like, "What's that? I don't know. That's a Gary Kurtz trick. Hey, that's a Gary Jones trick." And I was like, "Yeah, it is." So we ordered it for him because I'd never seen it as well. And he's learning it right now. And I watched it with him. Oh my God, it's such a good trick.
It's actually Chris Congreve's trick. Chris came up with the actual trick. And we put it on Dupe's DVD. And then I added something to make it self-working, basically. So you're not holding out any doubles or anything. So I just added something which made it into a self-working trick.
Which I'm guessing the inspiration for you and Chris for that one was, again, Interchange, Pocket Interchange by Gary Kurtz. We're back with Gary again now, aren't we?
Yeah, amazing, yeah. Paul Gordon's got some lovely work on the Interchange, so is John Carey as well. I love their stuff, yeah.
Wonderful plot. Awesome. Gary, we're almost at the end. I am going to leave things in your hands to finish off. Would you like to give everybody one last piece of advice, a Gary Jonesism, to wrap this whole thing up?
Don't take yourself seriously. Just go and have fun. If you are having fun, the audience will as well. Oh, and preparation. Make sure you're prepped. Make sure you know your pocket management. Most important. Have fun.
You're so more eloquent than Cameron Francis. I asked him the same question last week, and he said his Cameron Francisism was, "Don't do a shit Elm to the clowns." That was it. That was all he had.
I just did three. Sorry, just before Cameron came to the UK to do some filming, and I went out for a drink with him, and he was stood at the bar speaking in his lovely American accent with a slice of salami on his shoulder. I'll just leave it there.
Yeah. Oh, that's That's awesome. Gary, it has been a real pleasure having you on the show. Honestly, you're amazing. You can check out, I mean, do you have a website where you sell your creations that people can go to?
No, I don't sell it anymore. I've got my books or so, but they can get hold of me through Messenger, Gary Jones Magician. But I don't sell things anymore because I kind of gave up lecturing last year.
Well, Life's a Beach, Volume 1 and 2, myself and Ryland reviewed on the review show.
Yeah, thank you for that.
Amazing. They are absolutely amazing. They are so good.
Yeah, we're in the process of doing Volume 3.
Really?
Yeah, at some point.
I love that it's not just tricks. You've also got stories in there and advice and, you know, so much, such an eclectic mix of routines. There's so many different things in there that you can...
Yeah.
I love the stuff with the dice as well. So many good routines. Yeah, amazing. Brilliant. 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 So, yeah, so you can get those from Gary. But, I mean, your material's available everywhere. You've released stuff through Big Buy Media, Alakazam, Penguin Magic, everybody at one point or another. You've bought something out through everyone. And I you know what, actually, finishing off, one of my favourite Gary Jones creations is one that most people have never seen. Every time I perform it, people go, I've never seen that before. Who's that? Gary Jones. And it's the thing that you brought out through Alakazam. And it's Thought Reader, was it? Or Thought Card or something? The one with the symbols?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, God, I forgot the name of it. Yeah, Thought Jar, yeah.
Yeah, that's so good.
Because they've put the new version out now, haven't they?
Yeah.
Myself and Mark Bendo.
Yeah, you and Mark brought that out, and I still use it to this day. I don't know about a new version, because I got the old version, and I'm more than happy with that, and I've never upgraded, but it's just the thinking behind that is genius.
Yeah, that was Mark's genius idea of the symbols. He took my duality, and then what we can use symbols for this, and created the symbols, and it's just amazing. I mean, Mark's brain is just amazing. Bless him, yeah.
Well, hopefully we'll see more from you and Mark in the future as well.
Yeah. I think once he gets through what he's going through at the moment, I think he's going to come out fighting the other end. Bless him. Yeah. It's just that he's sort of, it's been tough. You know, he's been furloughed during this pandemic, and also he's looking after his father. So it's quite demanding, you know, when you care for someone. Yeah.
Well, actually, will you be doing something with Lee Smith in the future again? Because you two
Yeah. Lee and I, we spoke about this. We wanted to do some more gags, some of the fun stuff we did. Myself, Lee, and Mark, we want to do some more gags, and I'll probably do some of Etienne as well. Etienne's just crazy, absolutely crazy.
We did a
bloody dogs DVD. The idea was that it's a load of rubbish, and it genuinely was a load of rubbish, and we sold loads. I did a lecture once, and the book said, "Oh, you'd be better than the world there." I thought, well, I didn't even know it was being sold. I thought, yeah. We did it on purpose to be bad.
Oh my gosh. Well, Gary, it has been a real pleasure having you on the show. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. And guys, don't forget to subscribe to the channel. We're going to be back tomorrow. What's going on tomorrow? Tomorrow's Wednesday, so I'll be back with Ryland doing a review show tomorrow. So it's going to be a review show with me and Ry. And yeah, we've got stuff going on all week. So subscribe to the channel, and we'll see you again. But Gary, thank you so much.
Thank you.